Welcome to Lightning in a Bottle, the essential podcast for middle market business owners, key stakeholders, and the advisors who guide them. I'm Josh Pottinger and joined by my co-host, Jason Chirogiannis. Together, we lead ATX Wealth Partners, a private wealth management team at UBS here in Austin, Texas. Now, over the course of almost 30 years, we've built a vibrant community and have curated a suite of resources tailored for your success, from insightful white papers and cutting-edge research to exclusive in-person events and expert-led podcasts. We are here to provide the tools that you need. Now, if you're considering an exit, this is likely the most significant financial decision of your life, and typically, you only have one chance to get it right. So our mission is clear: to arm you with the knowledge to enhance the value of your business, navigate a successful sale, and of course, optimize your post-exit financial outcomes. Now with that, let's dive in and unlock the strategies that will prepare you for a prosperous future. Hello everyone, Josh Pottinger here, and I am excited to announce Lightning in a Bottle episode number 31. I've got a friend of mine and colleague here at UBS, Christian Vandriel.
Christian. Josh. Couldn't be more excited. I've been listening since your very first podcast.
Ah, well, good. Well, thanks, Christian. Let me go ahead and introduce Christian and let the audience know why he's here and what we're going to be talking about today. So Christian grew up actually in Rotterdam, and you can tell that he's got a bit of an accent, and it's not from West Texas or East Texas. It's actually from the Netherlands.
So true. I've tried to hide it in the past, but not
no,
so
no, no. You've got to leverage that fine accent you've got. Well, he grew up in Rotterdam, like I said. His hobbies include playing tennis, snowboarding, traveling, and spending time with his family over in Europe. Christian is a director and client solutions specialist in the family office solutions team. And this is a special team that it was established to holistically serve $100 million plus net worth families and family offices. And Christian's been doing this for the last 15 years. Before that, he spent about 5 years in investment banking, 10 years in private wealth management, actually. Christian joined UBS in 2015. And so he's worked in New York, he's worked in Zurich, in Paris, in Milan, in Amsterdam. I think you're probably kind of like the Dos Equis man.
And I'm here today with you in Austin.
Very interesting guy. So, so anyway, all right, well, that's enough with introducing my friend Christian. We're going to talk about what the topic is today. So for those of you that are not familiar with this, UBS publishes some pretty interesting reports. And one of our competitive advantages is just our global footprint. We've got boots on the ground in countries all over the world. And we put together a really cool report called the Global Entrepreneur Report for 2025. Now, this is the first report for this piece. We put out some other ones on family offices and other cool surveys that we do around the world. But this particular one is based on a survey of over 150 UBS entrepreneur clients and network members across all ranges of businesses. So these startups and businesses account for almost $20 billion in combined annual revenue. So again, this is our first report solely made for and made with entrepreneurs. And it highlights their expectations on future investments, hiring plans, artificial intelligence, as well as some of their key concerns and sentiment about their respective industry outlook.
Couldn't be more excited. As I said, we at UBS publish so many great, great white papers and reports. We have our Global Wealth Report. We have our Global Family Office Report. We have our Billionaires Insights Report. And this is our very first Global Entrepreneur Report. When it got published, I immediately had to think of Jason and you, knowing you spent your entire career, more than 30 years, devoting yourself with your team to serving founders, business owners, and entrepreneurs. So again, this is great to talk about the report with you today.
Yep. Well, good. And if you're a listener out there and you want a copy of the report, feel free to reach out to us. But for those of you that prefer to listen to things, like a lot of us do these days with podcasts and stuff, we're going to spend the next maybe 25 to maybe 40 minutes. We'll see how it goes. We've been doing a little prep work for this, so we've got a little agenda. So why don't we kick it off here, Christian, with you work with a lot of emerging and successful entrepreneurs out there, and in which areas are they planning to invest these days?
Yeah. Thanks, Josh. And when we're talking about investing, this is, of course, not the investing in stocks and bonds and a portfolio. These are founders. These are business owners. These are successful entrepreneurs that invest in themselves and mostly their businesses. So globally speaking, entrepreneurs surveyed in the Americas here stand out as being the most optimistic. And I'm not surprised myself for various reasons. Mm-hmm. From a sector perspective, confidence is high among technology, healthcare, and industrial entrepreneurs, and a little less so for those in consumer discretionary and consumer staples. Entrepreneurs and founders that we have surveyed mainly anticipate investments in three key areas to answer your question. Mm-hmm. People, of course. Not just hiring people, but also providing incentives, training, and everything what's needed to retain top talent. And we'll talk about that later on today. Right. Mm-hmm. Unsurprisingly, secondly, strategic acquisitions or partnerships. Partnering, building, investing in real assets, factories, but also in technology and your capabilities to write codes, by example. Thirdly, of course, investing in the digital transformation, AI infrastructure, as well as applications and models, and also about the application itself we're going to talk about mm-hmm. today. When I look back at my last year, 5 years, 10 years serving and partnering with you and speaking with our clients, I hear every day that hiring and retaining top talent globally here in the US and here in Texas is a key issue. A statistic I thought to share with you, Josh, is that this year, job switchers saw their wages go up by 4.2%, while wages for so-called job stayers jumped 4.4%. So that is a nationwide average. Mm-hmm. Founders, entrepreneurs, and business owners usually need highly specialized workers. So they face that issue, building out their team, ramping up. And the way we support our founders, executives, business owner clients, but also the families behind them is we help them identifying the need, the gap. We have shared job descriptions in the past. We connect our clients with recruiters and then also focus on succession planning within maybe the family office or within the business.
So Christian is basically our first point of contact whenever we are covering a family office, whenever our team is covering a family office. So we have a handful of family offices that we take care of out there. And so they have a very wide array of needs, everything from reporting needs to family office governance to tax issues that they may need to kind of work through, might be philanthropic issues, family advisory issues. So it kind of runs the gamut. So the way I explain the family office solutions team, it's like a SWAT team of specialists that's 100% focused on family offices. And they are there for us to be able to leverage on behalf of our clients.
So Josh, you could have not said it any better. We help clients with transitions such from a family-owned business to the business of family, mm-hmm. or from being a business owner to being an owner of multiple businesses or an investor in multiple businesses. So indeed, Josh, as you said, we have developed a range of ultra-high net worth capabilities in the pillar of investments, the pillar of technology, and a pillar of family and passions, and you've summarized that mm-hmm. perfectly.
Good.
If I may ask you a question.
Sure, yes, of course.
So now we've talked a bit about how and where successful entrepreneurs invest, and we talked a little bit about what my team does to support your clients and business owners. You have supported various of your clients through business cycles. When reading the report, but also asking your clients, what do you feel are their top concerns?
Sure. Well, when I was going through the report, there was definitely a lot of similarities. I mean, we're seeing a lot of the same things here just with our own client base. But when you talk about hiring, many of our clients indicate that they're having trouble hiring and retaining employees. I mean, that's been a challenge for quite a while. So I don't think that was a surprise to any of us. Three other top concerns, though, both in the short term and in the long term, are, go figure, shocker, mm-hmm. political instability or uncertainty, higher taxes, and also major geopolitical conflicts. Seems to have escalated a little bit in the more recent past. And so when I asked our entrepreneurs about business-specific challenges, we often hear about changes in industry regulations and compliance requirements. Now, actually, anecdotally, I have one particular client that founded a company, and it was due to new regulations that were enacted in 2025 that caused him to lose 40% of his revenue just year over year, just because of some regulatory issues. And oftentimes, you know, some of these regulations are done in good spirit, but the unintended consequences that some people that are impacted with are pretty severe. So they've been in like hardcore crisis management and trying to figure out how to get through this. So that's a very real, legitimate concern. And then, of course, many are worried about cybersecurity threats. Our episode number 27 was all about cybersecurity. And we had Morgan Kayak on with Night Dragon. They're a great private equity shop that focuses on cybersecurity. And so we talked all about cybersecurity for small and medium-sized businesses. And unfortunately, I think this piece is often overlooked a little bit. And unfortunately, they don't take action until they get taken. In fact, our roundtables, you know, you might be familiar with our roundtables that we love to do. One of our clients shared with us how their controller unfortunately wired out six figures, and it was because they were hacked and they intercepted an invoice and changed one little digit on the deal, and she didn't catch it. Anyway, they ultimately ended up getting the money back, but that was a kick in the pants to make sure they start taking some action there. So, you know, phishing, ransomware, denial of service attacks, social engineering. You know, 40% of the clients that we work with identify cybersecurity as their top service gap, but only 44% of these families have cybersecurity controls in place. And many business owners fall short of best practices in managing their cyber risks. So very much a real thing. So it was interesting to see that this Global Entrepreneur Report is interviewing entrepreneurs all over the world. And it's consistent with what we're seeing here on the ground in Texas.
So true. And when we would talk to a family office client in Europe, we would talk to a billionaire client in Asia, who would talk to an entrepreneur here in the US, mm-hmm. that feedback is indeed the same. It is painful to see that it indeed takes a phishing attack or two or three mm-hmm. for clients to take action. So that's why I enjoyed, I remember, podcast number 27 with Morgan Kayak from Night Dragon, to stress the importance of taking action. And here at UBS, clients are sometimes surprised that we have a robust offering of vetted, white glove, ultra high net worth service providers that can help clients both with physical security mm-hmm. as well as with digital security.
Right.
I think it's worth exploring.
Yeah, sure. That's interesting. I mean, and even just this morning, Lauren on our team was talking about one of our clients where there was somebody supposedly from the credit card company that was calling clients and saying that they're with the service department and trying to get stuff out of them, critical information. Now, thankfully, this particular client didn't disclose anything too revealing, which is good, but it's sad because there's so many bad actors out there. We have an elderly client, you know, and she's been taken advantage of. And so we've had to put extra precautions in place here to protect her, and have engaged her two sons into the process. So it takes a good trusted team to help protect us from these bad actors out there. They're pretty smart and sneaky these days.
You said it so well, Josh, and I enjoyed listening into the conversation with Lauren and your client in the morning. And that's also my experience. I've supported clients in Asia, in the Middle East, and in Europe, and I've sat in these conversations. And mm-hmm. I think it's an important topic for today and an important topic for tomorrow. And Josh, now we're talking about the cyberspace and technologies. What do you hear from your clients offers them the biggest commercial opportunity to actually invest in, Josh?
So I think the obvious answer is artificial intelligence, right? Definitely offering the greatest commercial opportunity for their industries. And interestingly enough, last year, in the fourth quarter of last year, I had an opportunity to come up to New York, and I sat down with a couple of our colleagues on the investment banking side, along with one of the large financial magazines out there to talk about artificial intelligence and how founders are thinking about it. And so I did a ton of research. I basically just fired out an email to all of our founders that we have in our database. And I said, hey, I'm going up to talk about this. I'd love to visit with you a little bit. It was really, really fascinating, actually, because everybody's on board with artificial intelligence. Like, how do we leverage this? But nobody has a really good, solid answer as to how they're going to leverage it. And the problem is this technology is change. It's evolving so quickly. It feels like every couple of weeks, there's some new aspect to it. But yeah, the three main simple reasons here, Christian, are better customer service and experiences for people with the right AI tools. It's improved productivity for their employees, and also improved content creation and marketing materials. UBS recently was able to get Microsoft's Copilot deal. I spent a lot of time just kind of messing around with some of the other AI tools out there, and it's just absolutely mind-boggling. And I do think, I mean, this is Josh Bottinger talking here, but I do think we're going to see companies out there that are doing exponentially more business with a fraction of the employees that they had before. It kind of goes back to that saying, it's like AI is not necessarily going to replace humans, but humans that aren't leveraging AI will get replaced.
Yeah, just yeah. Well said. I think we're living in exciting times.
Yes.
As you said, things are evolving so quickly. We see it with our very eyes. We help our clients and they add value to their communities. When you look and think of the various stages that entrepreneurs go through and think of the application of artificial intelligence, think of pre-seed, think of seed, think of the early stage, growth, then expansion, and potentially the exit phase. In all of these three applications of AI add value in all of these stages. Mm-hmm. Again, stating the obvious here, our clients do focus on the safe implementation of artificial intelligence, just as we prioritize that at UBS. That means that sometimes clients prefer a slower rollout within their company, within their startup, take time to develop an internal tool that add value in the long run while protecting clients' data and keep that really strictly internal. Yeah.
Those were actually a couple of things that really stood out to me, which was keeping the data secure. Because AI is all about data. You got to have good data, first of all, and then you got to secure that data. That was super key and a consistent theme in all of my conversations. And the other thing too, what's interesting is the legal world doesn't quite know how to handle this new world we're living in.
Yeah.
And so they are still trying to get their heads wrapped around how to manage this kind of new paradigm that we're in now. So, all right, let's move on to our next topic. So, you know, I know this topic is close to your heart and also mine, by the way, our team, is how do entrepreneurs tackle succession planning?
Yeah, Josh, this is close to my heart. I transitioned out of investment banking into private wealth management just for this reason. It's great to support business owners financing their businesses, growing their businesses, and merging their businesses, but it is just as exciting to work with the family behind the CEO, help them with succession planning. Thinking of the future, Josh, founders and entrepreneurs aspire to balance personal interests with business and investing. This literally just means more time with family, more travel, more creating memories with the family. That's something that you and I love to do as well. And I'm glad to read that as one of the observations of this report, a third of the founders, entrepreneurs and business owners that I spoke with here in the Americas indicated the desire to start their own family office, actually. And that does not surprise me neither. The family office, acting as the agent of the family, can really advance family initiatives beyond just managing and administering what has already been created, Josh. Mm-hmm.
Well said, Christian. I mean, Jason and I, we take months and years to help some of our clients, their families, with the build out. And it's great to be of support to the founders, business owners, and entrepreneurs out there. So sometimes it's just simply powerful to connect clients directly, You know, UBS offers several interesting client groups, such as the Industry Leader Network and our Growth Entrepreneur Network, where fellow entrepreneurs and investor insights, experts, mentors, and events kind of all come together.
Yeah, Josh, we organize events all across the globe, from Hong Kong to Singapore, to Dubai, to Zurich, to London, to Paris, to Brazil, here all across the United States, to connect our clients. And sometimes it can be very refreshing for them to sit into a room with fellow entrepreneurs together with you and talk about what are their struggles and how they solve for that. It's inspiring. We have an event in New York in just a few weeks from now where we actually connect 35 tech entrepreneurs. Couldn't be more excited.
Yeah. Now, that's fun. When we do our roundtables, I think that some of the greatest value they get is just interacting with other founders. You know, I mean, that's exchanging stories and, you know, advice and whatnot. And so I think it's very valuable to bring people together in person, you know, for these kind of events. So let's talk about maybe some other similar trends as far as, you know, starting a family office. You know, Christian, let's kind of talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I spent the last few years of my life working on this. Let's zoom in on this, Josh. What I find today is that entrepreneurs who are going through one or more liquidity events are so much more younger than those monetizing in the past. Often, these entrepreneurs are more self-made as well. They've sometimes done it on their own or with a smaller team. They need a bigger team around themselves for the next phase in life, for the next stage of their business. These entrepreneurs are builders. They want to continue building and creating often. And I'm sure you see that with your clients too. They are not done yet. They have a mission. The family office, though, can be the conduit through which they now can make things happen. Post-liquidity events, entrepreneurs who have now built up their human capital now wish to take the document to multiple ventures. The family office is truly a way for them to scale their business, building initiatives. All in all, let's not forget that many entrepreneurs who go through a liquidity event essentially transition from a family business, as said before, to the business of managing a family. That comes with such different challenges and responsibilities. And again, the family office, the infrastructure, the human capital built there can help managing these responsibilities. Even if you look at this from a different angle, Josh, let's say your clients transition from being a business owner to an owner of multiple businesses, like an investor in multiple businesses. That is also a transition where a family office, certain build-out capabilities can be of major value.
What about the benefits of like a virtual family office or a single family office in this context?
Well, I'm glad you asked the question, because the value of a family office, it should be there for anyone, for any client of UBS, for anyone in the world. For the next generation, Josh, family offices can be used to incubate ventures from operating companies to philanthropic ventures. The family office can be helpful in such basic things as incorporating the venture, advising on tax structure, opening up bank accounts, providing the initial accounting back office, and ensuring other components are in place, such as HR and insurance. This can mean that it does not have to go and hire back office staff from the outset. The family office as a service can lower the barrier to entry to entrepreneurship for the next generation.
Yeah, I mean, we've got to be honest here. A family office is not right or not needed for some families. I mean, we see many clients initially benefit from the virtual services. So think of like bill paying, like bookkeeping, consolidated reporting, outsourcing certain functions with a bank before building a single family office. Because it, you know, when you start adding several employees into the cost structure of running the family office, you have to think about it, you know, relative to the total assets that are being managed and seeing if there are opportunities for them to be able to outsource through some of the virtual services or some of that services that, you know, for instance, you know, your team does for these family offices.
Yeah. And when we talked a bit about the next generation, it's often good to involve them early on. And I know you've talked about this in your own podcasts, because they might have different needs or they have different expectations and they value simplicity at times as well. So we often help clients with complex structures and setups, and some technology solutions can cut through that.
Right.
That is a beginning indeed,
mm-hmm.
from the virtual family office to a single family office and at times a multi-family office. That's how our business owner clients sometimes transition.
Yeah, and I think just based on what we talked about with whole AI, I mean, there's going to be some tools that are going to allow these family offices to create more efficiencies and just be better operators as well.
That's why I said we are living in exciting times.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Josh, we talked a little bit about the next generation, but if I could ask you a question, why are we talking so much about preserving wealth for the next generation, Josh?
Yes. You know, preserving wealth is very important. to a lot of our clients, it's probably one of the first things like, hey, I want to keep what I've got. So that's usually the first rule there. And so as a consequence, we're pretty passionate about this topic. So look, the majority of entrepreneurs tell us that they have not built up sufficient private wealth outside of their businesses as much as they should. So most of our clients are those that have already had the exit or have monetized a significant piece of their ownership structure. And so we spend a lot of time talking with those that are tracking towards that exit. And so it's not unusual to hear that they haven't built up a significant amount of wealth outside of their business. And so, you know, that's why we talk about this concept of the three L's. And this is something that a lot of our clients probably are tired of us thinking about, but it's very important. It's a very simple idea for a very complex and real challenge that people have. And so that's simply the three L's is liquidity, longevity, and legacy. So if you think about liquidity as the money you need now to take care of any sort of immediate cash flow needs over the next, call it 2 to 3 years, longevity is effectively the present value of your entire lifetime worth of cash flow needs in today's dollar amount. So it's, you know, think of it as like pre-funding your retirement. Right. And so to the extent that you have more money than you need to support your lifestyle, then all of that other money goes into the third discipline, which is legacy. So those three different pools of capital have very separate and distinct timelines and risk parameters. And so when we kind of walk through that with people, I think that makes a lot of sense because you want to make sure that you're not putting any money you need in the short term at risk. Right. So your liquidity pool needs to be extremely conservative, safe. Capital preservation is key. Then we need to grow your longevity pool of capital. And then you've got obviously the money left over that will be either given to another cause or maybe given to the, you know, passed down to the next generation or multiple generations. So it's how we help these clients navigate those phases when it comes to their family and their business and their investment portfolios and charitable foundations. So a family office can really play a role here, not only in the transactions, but in transitions like these. So, you know, the family office is there to transform and allocate any proceeds from a liquidity event according to their family values.
Yeah, well said, Josh. I'm glad we talk about the three L's. We call it Wealthway: liquidity, longevity, and legacy. And I know your clients must have heard this from you once or twice, but it's great also to apply those three L's not only to investing in their financial portfolio, but also to the operations behind them. Again, we talked about the virtual family office, single family office, or a multi-family office setup. And as you said, in these days, there are technology solutions, family office services that can help clients with their immediate needs.
Mm-hmm.
In the near term, that can help clients over the course of their lifetime in the medium term. And then in the long run, when they pass over or involve the next generation, again, the family office should evolve over the course of those 5 to 10 to 15 to 50 years. And again, wealth preservation is often the goal that is mentioned most frequently. It was a bit concerning for me, Josh, to read, as you said, that the majority of entrepreneurs tell us that they have not built up sufficient private wealth outside of their businesses as much as they should. That's why I think it's great that you and I are out there, take a deep dive and help entrepreneurs across all stages and educate them how to manage their business, manage their family, transition from a smaller investment portfolio to a larger over the course of time without forgetting how to embed their family values, align that with their investment goals, and be a better investor, be a better family member. And eventually the family office brings those elements together.
Mm-hmm. Our other colleague, James Jack, and I were interviewed by a journalist over at CNBC that wrote a piece all about this particular topic, about how entrepreneurs have not, you know, built up significant wealth outside of their business. So that was a lot of fun having that conversation. And if you're interested in seeing the article, just shoot us an email. I could send you a link to that as well. So Krishna, we're getting towards the end of our time here. So what is like the first thing that somebody should do? First of all, how much do you think a family should have before they even contemplate doing a single family office? And then secondly, what's the first move?
Two questions, Josh. How much?
I love how we have construction going on during our podcast.
Exactly.
I don't know if you hear that.
I've heard it. It's amazing. It's just right behind me. No, Josh, how much wealth should a family own for a family office to make sense? I think I get that question every day.
Mm-hmm. I figured that was a softball question for you.
I love it. And what should be the first sort of capabilities that you can consider building out? Two questions. These numbers have evolved over the course of your career in the last 30 years, in the last 20 years, in the last 10 years, and in the last 5 years. But 100 million net worth or investable assets are usually a pool of capital where it makes sense to start indeed employing people.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes you feel that when a client sells their business, they have an accountant who is transitioning with them, but then maybe becomes a part of the family office, an assistant or a bookkeeper. I actually answered the second question already, and now I realize that which are the capabilities that you prioritize.
Yeah.
And I often try to help our clients, together with you, Josh, together with Jason, together with our team in family office, and often our family office design and governance strategist, and actually show them a report like the one we discussed today, or the Global Family Office report that I have contributed to in the past, and show per wealth class, 100 million to 150 to 200 to 500 to a billion, what on average clients should pay or expect to pay for investment services, for overhead, and as a total expense figure that you can expect.
Yeah.
And we express it in basis points.
Uh-huh.
Usually a client feels, yeah, that is the right setup for me.
Uh-huh.
Or that is maybe expensive at this stage.
Right.
So that brings us to the second question. Wherever you are in that stage, and that's why I enjoy supporting you so much, there's never a right or wrong answer. The question often is, who are the trusted specialists around you already in place? Can we work with those people? Where do you want to be in a few years? Where do you want to be in the long run? And what is the team that you need to build out to get there? Again, that's why I refer to us helping clients, even with making reference to a recruiter at times, and build out the capabilities. Personally speaking, I think that bill pay, I think that safety, security, and staying cyber safe are important for a business owner and their family. Consolidated reporting is key for clients with complex structures and various types of assets, all the way from marketable liquid assets to esoteric and real assets. To keep oversight is important, especially if one's wealth is expected to grow.
Yeah.
So those are capabilities I always feel are good to think of and build out. And you see that clients who have an established family office usually have investment management as an in-house service that they have set up well. That's usually how you build your family office. But that element says due diligence or alternative investments are, quote unquote, outsourced to specialists like you, Josh.
Yeah. You know, a lot of folks don't realize or not getting as much value out of their relationship with the financial institution like UBS as they could. You know, they just don't know what they don't don't know, you know? And so I think if you're setting up a family office or looking at having another set of eyes to come in and take a look at what you're doing, the family structure, it's like, leverage this team. I mean, that's what they're here for. So, yeah, and they're pros.
Are doing a lot of education.
Yeah.
We are doing a lot of listening. We're doing a lot of best practice sharing. And I always feel that there's a benefit for a client to speak to you, of course, and then to us, because we've actually heard of these situations before and we've dealt with some of these issues before.
Right.
And it's not always about investing. It's not always about the business. It's often about what the family wants and what the family needs and how they believe they want to invest any proceeds from a liquidity event. That's why we talked today about the networks that, you know, we have set up and the roundtable dinners that you host, the education you provide through podcasts. I find it important, and that is more important in times of change like those.
Well, Christian, thank you so much for flying down to Austin, Texas to sit with me here. And it's good to see you. It's always good to see you. I think the last time we saw each other was in New York. So I'm glad you're down here enjoying some sun in Austin, Texas.
I'll be staying here for a few more days, and you please come back soon to New York.
Yeah, yeah. That sounds good. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed this show. This is episode number 31 here. And if you have any questions or would like more information on anything, just feel free to reach out to us. So with that, be safe, be well. And until next time, this is Josh. Thank you for tuning in to Lightning in a Bottle. It's been a pleasure bringing you today's insights from the brightest minds in business. To stay updated with relevant content, exclusive events, and our latest podcast episodes, send us a note to atxwealthpartners.com. Until next time, keep capturing the lightning of innovation and turning it into success. I'm Josh Pottinger, wishing you a productive and prosperous week ahead. And don't forget, know your options, be informed, and plan early. Take care and be well.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC registered broker dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.